This is Terry White in Mission Control.
The crew has been advised, that is the crew of Orion, that they will be about 16,000 feet high above the normal flight path at the time of our descent, and some 20,000 feet south of track. However, the lunar module guidance system will guide the spacecraft to take out these discrepancies for a normal landing.
This was the numbers passed.
After landing, the crew will then have a sleep period prior to beginning the first EVA, which at this time is scheduled to begin at 118 hours, 30 minutes ground elapsed time, or about 10:30 a.m. tomorrow morning Central Time.
It's 16:30 GMT.
The decision on whether or not the EVAs will be their full length of total of 21 hours will be made during the night while the crew is asleep. Such factors as the consumables remaining and the such as battery power, etc., in the lunar module will have an effect on this decision. To go back and recapitulate the reasons for the delay in landing, as Ken Mattingly came up upon his circularization burn during Revolution Number 13, he experienced a oscillation in the yaw mode for the service module engine during checkout, and it turns out that the secondary servo loop, or one of the circuits for the yaw gimbal drive, which can be controlled by either the GNN system or the stabilization and control system, which is a backup mode, apparently had this oscillation in it. Subsequent simulations and tests here and across the country have shown that there's no potential structural hazard to the spacecraft, even if it were necessary to go to the mode where there might be some chatter or oscillation in the yaw gimbal. Gimbal is the yoke on which the engine is mounted, one for pitch and one for yaw, and the thrust vector control system in effect acts as a tiller for turning the engine, much as you would use the handle on a outboard motor to direct the thrust of the propeller. The thrust vector control aligns the engine through the center of gravity of the spacecraft. At 103.09 into the mission of Apollo 16, this is Apollo Control.
That was Terry White, who's had a long day too, as the voice of Apollo Control with the flight direction team of Jerry Griffin, because of this anomaly, this problem with the thrust vector control, controlling what's called a yaw gimbal actuator in the service propulsion system rocket. How's that for a mouthful? But it looks like it's going to work. And the two spacecraft just went out of sight behind the moon 5 minutes ago. I misread the clock a minute ago. It said LOS, loss of signal, instead of AOS, acquisition of signal. They'll still be out of touch for about another 40 minutes from now. And 12 minutes from right now, while back behind the moon, Ken Mattingly is to fire that rocket anyway. The primary system is go. And raise his orbit. The reason he's in a low orbit now is before the lunar module and the command module disconnected, the command module took the both spacecraft down for a pass across the front side as low as 15 kilometers above the surface. Now, during that low pass orbit, the lunar module disconnected. This helps get the lunar module down lower before that powered descent, and saves rocket energy on the lunar module so that it may be used for hovering and finding the proper landing site. It gives them a little extra time on the descent engine. Well, then the command module is supposed to go back up into a circular 100-kilometer orbit and not pass as close as 15 kilometers to the surface. It's supposed to wait in that circular orbit as the mother ship waiting for the ducklings to come home. And that the problem occurred when Ken Mattingly was about to go back up into the higher orbit, and he realized that something was wrong with the yaw gimbal actuator, or backup stream in the electronics with the thrust vector control. Now they think they've got it all checked out, understand the problem, and can go ahead without danger to Ken Mattingly in the command module. So that is what is to take place now, 11 minutes from right now. He's to fire that engine, and then an hour and 4 minutes from now, 1 hour and 4 minutes from now, approximately, the lunar module, Orion, with John Young and Charlie Duke aboard, lunar module is to fire its descent engine and go ahead and touch down on the surface. Then, the first extravehicular activity, the first lunar excursion, has been postponed from the next few hours until 10:30 tomorrow morning, which turns out to be 16:30 hours GMT. That will be at 16 hours 30 GMT tomorrow, the first excursion of the Descartes Highlands, if this touchdown and everything goes all right. You heard Terry White mention something that's very interesting there, and that is that because of this delay of several revolutions in the descent, the lunar module will be 16,000 feet higher than normally planned and some 20,000 feet south of track. Let's see, that's some 6 kilometers south of track and some 5 kilometers higher than was normally expected. But the automatic guidance system in the lunar module, the computer on board with all of the numbers passed up for mission control, with its the onboard brain, the automatic brain, is to correct all of this and bring the lunar module right down to the proper spot. All this was done with updating of the automatic guidance system. And that's where we stand. The two spacecraft out of touch for about another 37 minutes. When they come around in view again, we should hear from Ken Mattingly as to the circularization maneuver, as to whether his rocket burned properly or not. And then we'll hear the final preparations for descent and touchdown by Young and Duke. So that's it for the moment from the Manned Spacecraft Center. This is Rhett Turner.
This is the Voice of America's live coverage of the flight of Apollo 16. Now, 103 hours, 15 minutes into the mission, the Voice of America will continue its worldwide coverage with a description of lunar touchdown in the Descartes Highlands. Power descent is now scheduled at approximately 2 hours, 11 GMT. We'll continue our progress reports and interrupt our regular programs if necessary.
Now, from the Voice of America newsroom, here is the news with Jack Moyles.
Flight controllers at Houston Space Center have given astronauts John Young and Charles Duke permission to go ahead with their planned landing in the Descartes Highland region of the moon. The decision came at the start of the 15th orbit of both spacecraft, more than 3 hours after the failure of one of the steering systems on the main engine of the command module threatened to cancel the landing. Shortly, astronaut Ken Mattingly will maneuver the command module into a circular lunar orbit. About an hour later, astronauts John Young and Charles Duke in the lunar module will begin their powered descent to the moon's Descartes Mountains.
This is the Voice of America's live coverage of the flight of Apollo 16. Now, 103 hours and 51 minutes into the mission. To bring us up to date on the circularization burn and preparations for touchdown, we take you to VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.
In about 1/2 minute from now, about 30 seconds, we should have acquisition of signal, meaning that the command and service modules will come into view on the east side of the moon after a backside pass. And then we'll know if the command module engine fired properly and Ken Mattingly circularized his orbit therein. And that means that we've bypassed the problem which caused this delay in the descent and touchdown. Let's go to mission control now.
We have CSM AOS as confirmed by the network controller. We'll come up live now with the air-to-ground circuit to monitor the next hour and a half frontside pass on Rev 16 and hopefully a successful landing.
That's Terry White still on duty. A long day in mission control for Jerry Griffin's flight team. We're waiting for the... there are always a few seconds delay while the network controllers, the voice network, tune in their receivers, while the engineers tune in the receivers on the voice circuit. So we don't usually hear this. We get confirmation of acquisition of signal from mission control, the fact that they're seeing the electronic signal come in a few seconds before they tune in the voice. And Jim Irwin's waiting until the engineers have the voice receivers tuned properly before he calls them. Jim Irwin acting as capsule communicator. Ignition of the LEM rocket engine for descent and touchdown. We now have a countdown clock display coming from the Mission Control Center. We can see it here in our VOA studio. 24 minutes, 25 seconds until firing of the descent engine. I believe we're hearing a signal now. We can hear just a little bit of noise coming in.
Hello, Houston.
There we are.
Ryan is
16 here.
Sound like John Young calling in.
Loud and clear, Jim.
Okay, I have a couple for you. On panel 12, will you get the function switch to range? And on panel 11, update a link, circuit breaker closed.
Jim Irwin going right ahead with the business at hand.
Update link is closed. Function switch to range.
Roger. And I'm standing by for your report.
Here comes Ken
Mattingly. And Jim.
Ken's report.
Okay, we got the ascent bats on at 103.42. ED bats are go at 37 volts.
Roger, copied ascent bats 103.42 and ED bats are good.
That was Charlie Duke, his ascent.
And
batteries.
I have a PDI.
And we were on inverter 2 for a while.
Copy, you were on inverter 2.
Go ahead.
John
okay.
Young
said, just for a little while.
India.
On inverter
104-17-2466, Theta 231, plus 56-9090, over.
They may have split off Ken Mattingly's communication circuit to the other controller by now, and we may not hear
copy,
it. I'm wondering why now.
4-1-7-2-4-6-6 plus 56-9090 for 231.
Good read back.
We haven't heard Ken Mattingly. I don't know if his circuit is switched to this particular channel that we're listening to or not.
Okay, was that 56-9091 or 0, Jim?
56-9090.
Okay.
If they're back in a normal mode, Hank Hartsfield would be talking to Ken Mattingly. And
do we have an uplink, Jim?
We hope they'll tell us.
Roger, if you have Pooh, if you go to data, we'll send you some uplinks.
Now they're talking about inserting some information
okay,
in
you
the
have it.
Computer.
Data.
When you
data
hear the phrase
the
Pooh, that means program 00. 00000. Pooh and accept. That means program 0 and the computer is ready to accept information being transmitted up from the ground. That's a great phrase. Pooh and accept, isn't it? Only the space age could come up with something like that. Still no confirmation on whether Ken Mattingly circularized the command module or not. had a telephone, had the right phone number, we'd call him and ask him. We're waiting for just to hear what comes from Mission Control out to our press center here.
And Orion, this is Houston with a few words for you on RCS and Mission.
Jim Irwin's fading down into the depths of the signal.
Roger, John, you can anticipate a slight roll transient ignition because of CG position. And on the RCS, of course, we want normal configuration. And your RCS quantity, system A, is off because of the high pressure in that system. And it's off by about 13%. 13% more than indicated.
What Jim Irwin is telling Duke and Young is that they can expect a slight roll in the spacecraft when they begin the burn, the descent burn. Also, his RCS, or reaction control system, thruster quantities are off by about 13%. He thinks they've got a 13% more than's indicated. That's the small control thrusters that control the attitude of the spacecraft. You have a verb 33 on the display panel on which is monitoring the computer.
Okay.
The DISCI is the display
keyboard.
Let's do
an enter on that.
Who an enter?
We've lost high bit rate. We have one more uplink to send.
We've lost high bit rate. That means that they're not getting high data flow back from the spacecraft, but they have one more uplink. That means we have one more bit of information to feed into the computer. Mission Control does. One more bit of information to feed up into the LIM, Orion, spacecraft computer. This is to help guide the lunar module Orion down to the Descartes Highlands. It's got to correct for quite a bit of dispersion now, since they've gone two extra orbits around the moon, and the track across the ground, across the lunar surface, has changed. They've got to take out some, they're going to be some 5,000 meters higher than they would have been if they descended on schedule, and they'll be some 6,000 meters to the south of their original track. And you've got to have all the right numbers in the computer in order for the automatic system to take it down. We'll be following with you right through that powered descent to touchdown, trying to give you a second-by-second description, hopefully, of how they're descending, how fast they're going, how high above the surface they are, how far they are from the landing site. I hope I can do all that.
Switch off.
That's another instruction from Jim Irwin asking Orion to turn its function switch off.
Which one, Jim?
Well,
the S-band functions.
We obviously don't have Casper on this circuit that we're monitoring.
No, negative. The one, the ranging switch.
Okay, it's going off.
That's Charlie Duke saying, turn the function switch on. He says, all of them? Jim says, oh, no, just the ranging function switch. Charlie says, okay, it's going off. I can understand his southern accent.
Orion, this is Houston. We want battery 3 off now.
Jim Irwin is from Colorado.
Roger.
Roger.
You'll put a little more load on the ascent bets.
They're two pilots talking to each other.
Even battery 3's off.
When two pilots talk to each other, they can almost talk a foreign tongue anywhere. Anyway, it doesn't matter where they come from. What accent goes along with it, with the language? Charlie Duke is from the state of South Carolina, in the southeastern part of the United States. He took along, I think as much for a lark, as much for a joke as anything, he took along with him some food that's peculiar to the South that nobody else seems to really like. It's ground-up hominy, for those of you who may not know what grits are. But anyway, it's ground up hominy, and in the South, they call it grits. And you put butter in it. It's very much like cream of wheat or oatmeal, but it's made from hominy. You put butter in it, or you put gravy on it, cream gravy, and Southerners love it. And apparently it's quite a joke among other people of the United States that only Southerners would eat that stuff.
Point that on me right at you. Would that help?
That's him, Charlie Duke from South Carolina. Says he's going to try to point that Omni at him. The noisy signal is because of the inefficient pointing of the high-gain antenna. This has been a little bit troublesome all along, but hasn't been one of those things that's absolutely necessary in order to descend to the surface. Well, it doesn't look like we're going to hear until PAO, until the mission commentator tells us about, gives us a report on Ken Mattingly's burn of the rocket. In the meantime, let me bring you this conversation we recorded with Charlie Duke about himself, the lunar module pilot, the guy you hear talking there with Jim Irwin. This is the second man who will go down to the surface of the moon with John Young. We recorded this.
Well, the lunar module pilot on Apollo 16 is another one of our deep south part of the United States crew. In fact, all of you, as we've mentioned before, will be talking with southern drawls, and it may egg me on just a bit, too, Charlie.
That's
Charlie Duke, the lunar module pilot. Where are you from originally?
My home is in Lancaster, South Carolina. My folks still live in Lancaster. Rhett, I was born in Charlotte, North Carolina, but I claim South Carolina's home.
You know, they kid me about my southern drawl sneaking out when during EVAs or excited parts of space missions, the boys back in the office say that my southern drawl comes out, too. Well, you guys are not going to be any help to me this time at all.
No, I can imagine. Mine is a little bit less subdued than yours, but more subdued than my brother's. But I still talk like I'm from the South, even though we've been out of it on assignment for a number of years.
You know, a lot of people I've met overseas say that that's the one sectional accent in the United States that's most difficult for them to understand. People in Britain, in India, wherever English is spoken around the world, so we may have a little job to interpret for them.
Well, I hope that I can pronounce my words slowly during this interview and clearly.
No, I'm thinking about during that lunar surface activity.
Oh,
and we're going to depend upon Tony England to translate for you.
Okay. Well, hopefully, you know, I got kidded a lot on when I was at Capcom on Apollo 10. Everybody from my hometown wrote letters that said, oh, we enjoyed it so much. It was the first time we ever understood what was going on.
Back in South
Carolina.
That's
right, in South Carolina.
Well, you know, where did you go to school? Where did you get your formal education?
Well, I graduated from high school at a prep school called Admiral Farragut Academy in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Then
I went directly into the Naval Academy and got a bachelor's degree from the Naval Academy in 1957.
Was that in aeronautics?
Well, it was in naval science, really.
Naval science.
Uh-huh. It's a general engineering degree in naval science. Then the Air Force sent me back to school in 1962 for 2 years to MIT, and I got a master's degree in aeronautics there in 1964.
How old are you now?
I'm 36.
And you're married, and how many children
have
you?
I have a wonderful wife that I'm very much in love with, and two fine boys.
How old are the boys?
Boys, one just turned 7, and the other one will be 5 first of May.
Are they old enough to be space nuts?
They like to build rockets and things like that, and they like to watch the liftoff of the Saturns. They've seen a couple now. Charles, I don't think, the oldest one, doesn't want to be an astronaut, but the young one wants to be an astronaut, though.
Okay, they're going to be watching Daddy anyway on the moon, aren't they?
Yes, fortunately, the EVAs occur early enough in the evening so that they can at least stay up and watch the first part of it, so I'm thankful for that.
Uh-huh. How did you get into flying then after your education?
Well, at the Naval Academy, after about my third year, I decided that I wanted to fly, but to be a naval aviator, you had to go to sea, and I just did not like sea duty. Now, that sounds strange from a guy that went to the Naval Academy, but I hated sea duty. And I decided that if I was going to be a pilot, then it better be in the Air Force. So I volunteered for the Air Force, which at that time you could do.
Jim Irwin did this too, didn't he?
Yes, sir, he did.
Who was Tom Stafford. A lunar module pilot on Apollo 15.
Right. Tom Stafford was another. Don Eisley. We had quite a few. Bill Anders. There were quite a few of us that went to the Naval Academy, ended up in the Air Force.
And you flew hot jets?
Yes, I was in Germany for 3 years at the Ramstein, and loved my tour over there and got to see a lot of Europe and enjoyed it very much. Came back to MIT, and then after that went to Edwards to the test pilot school.
Is that where you became interested in and also eligible to enter the astronaut program?
Right. We had a after graduation from test pilot school, I stayed on as an instructor. And I thought I'd missed being an astronaut by a couple of years. I figured that I was just had been a little bit too young and immature and inexperienced to get selected. And all lo and behold, about a month after I graduated from test pilot school, NASA announced a call for another group, and I was very lucky.
At least you had that 1,500 hours you needed, and you had the application in.
That's right.